How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday here on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network. I am joined, as always, by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare up at WrestlingObserver.com. And we have about 5 hours of stuff to pack into this two-hour radio show today. But alas, we've got... we got a lot of time up there on the website. We've got shows, two shows up last night talking UFC and the World Series of Fighting. We'll have another one up tonight talking the WWE Payback Show. And tonight, it's a chance to look at the past week of stuff going on in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. On this show you are listening to right now, we're going to talk about the WWE's Payback pay-per-view. It's coming up moments after the show goes off the air. We got a lot of big matches on the show. We'll talk about all of those. And, of course, last night's UFC 161 with Rashad Evans versus Dan Henderson in the main event of that show. Coming off a night where we also saw the doom of John Fitch at the World Series of Fighting show. John Fitch's first fight since being cut from UFC in a very controversial manner, and Dana White, of course, probably pleased to see that his cut, I'm sure in his eyes, justified after John Fitch choked out in the first minute of the first round of a fight with Josh Berkman. We're going to talk about that, plus so much news to get into. The Reed Flair autopsy report has come in. He passed away as a result of a drug overdose, what a lot of people had figured when the story of his death first broke. But we'll talk a little bit about that. Plus, as noted, the Payback Show and the gambling lines of the Payback Show, and now those have switched. The gambling lines, yes, believe it or not, you can gamble on pro wrestling. We've talked about this before. There are always gambling lines that come out on the weekends, and there's always a very interesting number. Largely because probably the creative team writes a show and then puts a bunch of money on the show. And then, as it turns out, there was a lot of money that came in on a particular match, and now things have swung dramatically in the odds. We're going to talk about that. Plus, tonight, the Triple AI pay-per-view. Man, we got a lot of stuff to talk about today. And everything you always wanted to know about all of the shows on television and more. So we're going to head to our first commercial break. We shall be back in just a moment talking more. You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for 2 hours every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, 794, sometimes Channel 92, the Sirius XM Radio app on your smartphone, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, also available on the TuneIn Radio app. If you search Sports Byline USA or Wrestling Observer Live, hopefully you guys got all that. About a million different ways to listen to the show. And we're joined by Mike Sempervivi, as always, and we got 2 hours today to talk all the pro wrestling and mixed martial arts that we possibly can. Mike, you are alive after a marathon night of recording, hosting, watching, being a dad. Good work, my man.
You know, it's a tough job, but somebody's got to do it, and it's very fulfilling to finish up doing a three-hour show with Wrestling Observer newsletter editor-in-chief Dave Meltzer, and then finishing that up and having your child wake up and walk in and tell you Happy Father's Day. It was a fine start to the morning.
I teach a little kids' class, jiu-jitsu. And there's a little kid, I think he's 5, and Thursday we said, hey, Augustus, what are you going to do for your dad for Father's Day? And he goes, I'm going to wake him up really early. And I thought, man, I can't wait to have kids. What a better gift than to be woken up really early!
Well, if your kid's anything like mine, too, not only do they wake you up really early, they wake you up with the Ray Stevens bombs away knee drop, bounce from the top of the bed or whatever they can get close to, right onto your chest while you're asleep, and then you have to wake up and not try to kill them once you get the breath back.
That's right. You got to tell the kid he's not allowed to do that because he could give you a heart attack like Jerry Lawler and those multiple elbow drops from Dolph Ziggler.
Exactly.
Hadn't thought of that, had you?
Kayfabe and the kids already.
Not kayfabe, that's a fact!
And still went out there to do more. And by the way, Jerry Lawler never had kids. You, as of right now, don't have any actually human kids, but I do want to thank you, wish you a happy Father's Day. for the kiddies.
That's right. They woke me up this morning scratching on the carpet outside of our door, which you're not supposed to do, and I had to chastise them, but they were so cute, I forgave them. All right, enough of this sickening talk. Sickening. We've got Payback, everybody, the WWE Payback show. And hopefully this show is not sickening. We've got seven matches and a pre-show match, including the best promoted dark match of all time, Sheamus and Damian Sandow, which is the pre-show match, which I'm going to try and check out now that I've got I got the Apple TV. So it makes life a lot easier watching a lot of this stuff on the internet, which will bring us to the AAA pay-per-view later on here on this program. But Sheamus and Damian Sandow on the pre-show. This one is going to be available on a million different platforms. I actually don't have a list in front of me. I think this one's going to be on the part of the new Yahoo deal, probably WWE.com, YouTube, all that kind of stuff. But what are your thoughts? Are you excited for this particular battle, Mr. Sempervivi?
You know, actually, in a way, yes. Yes, I am, believe it or not. Damian Sandow, it's, you can say a lot about them, you know, spending the time on Sheamus and Sandow. And I would assume that this was supposed to be at one time for the pay-per-view. I mean, I would figure it had to have been. And no matter what you think about the comedy that they've done and if it's corny or anything like that, as far as I'm concerned, Damian Sandow's been very entertaining in all of this. And he's not a great master technician in the ring or anything like that. But I think he's come along a long way from when he started because, honestly, he looked like one of those guys where you wondered if they had played real sports because he was kind of rigid and stiff. Not stiff as far as his styles go, but stiff as far as his movements go. And I think he's come along, you know, great, even though they really haven't given him a whole heck of a lot to work with. But the stuff they've given him as it relates to the challenges that he's done on Raw and SmackDown with Sheamus have been absolutely fantastic. And this is probably going to be a 4-minute and 30-second squash for Sheamus. With that said, they have been entertaining and leading up to it. And like you said, it's probably the best promoted dark match of all time.
I hope is a finish that that Damian Sandow produces from under the ring, a gigantic chess piece, preferably the horse. What's that called? The rook? Or is that a different?
No, I guess that would be the rook.
Is it? I don't play a lot of chess. It's probably shocking to a lot of people listening to this. I play human chess. But anyway, the giant horse head, waffle Sheamus with it behind the referee's back, get the pin, and yell checkmate, and then the next night on Raw, they can do their rematch, and Sheamus can get his win back with the bro kick.
And not only that, this will lead to comedy with JBL calling out Jerry Lawler about that's who he should have had in his court when he was facing off with the Knights.
That's right. That's right. By the way, I'd like to send a shout out to Jackie Fargo, Memphis legend, who we should note is hospitalized as we speak. Critical condition. He's had heart problems in a while. The original pre-Jerry Lawler King of Memphis. I believe he's 85, something like that, but wrestled. He was a big star, but settled in Memphis. And I don't think there's anybody in the area that does not know the name Jackie Fargo. And I think for years Lawler has tried to get him into the WWE Hall of Fame, if I recall correctly. But he's in rough shape. So best wishes to Jackie Fargo.
Yeah, in a lot of ways would deserve to be in there too, because that Fargo strut. You know, a lot of people say, well, Ric Flair got that from Buddy Rogers, and of course everybody kind of got it from Buddy Rogers. Everybody always takes from everything in wrestling, but that Fargo strut is one that Lawler would do, Bill Dundee would do. Ric Flair was always said to have probably usurped it from him as well, and he was a guy who didn't care about that. And in fact, the Memphis Heat documentary, it's almost a must-see because of how well done it was, and it doesn't get, you know, they go into a lot of history. It's not every bit of Memphis history. That's too hard to tell. But Jackie Fargo is on there, and this was only done a few years ago, but even at his age, he still would be, you know, the type of honorary guy that would really, you know, want to kick your butt even at 85 years old. So best wishes to him, and hopefully he comes out of this fully recovered.
All right, on to the main card here for Payback, which, of course, goes on the air moments after we go off the air. Dolph Ziggler, Alberto Del Rio for the title. Now, interestingly enough, as I noted when the show started, you can bet on pro wrestling in certain places. Don't even ask me why, but you can. So anyway, this match had tremendously long odds in favor of Alberto Del Rio. I think at some point it was like minus 1,400 or something like that. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that Alberto Del Rio is winning the title. It means he's winning the match. So the belief is that some folks on the WWE creative team may have gotten the final script for the show and then went in and made some bets. And so a lot of money came in. Anyway, interestingly enough, it appears that that the odds have switched up quite a bit in the last 12 hours. So that could mean that perhaps we are getting a switcheroo in terms of the Ziggler match. Perhaps WWE saw the odds and decided, okay, well, we're going to have to switch this around. And so money started coming in another direction. And anyway, it's a very, very interesting story. But at the end of the day, Mike, who do you think wins this match?
I'm actually going with the Dolph Ziggler winning and retaining. I think he needs a win coming off the concussion. It's not like this whole thing with he and Alberto and Jack Swagger have been great anyway. But obviously Jack Swagger being out with his absence, Dutch Mantel has still been floating around there. Zeb Coulter has still been floating around. So I have a feeling that Dolph ends up, there's a whole bunch of ridiculousness that takes place with Big E and AJ and probably Zeb Coulter as well and obviously Ricardo, and then when it all shakes out, I think Dolph Ziggler gets the win. It may be dirty, but I think he actually gets the pin and retains.
All right, we've got Caitlin and AJ Lee for the Divas title, and your thoughts on this match?
You know, believe it or not, this has actually been, in a way, well built up in the fact that they've been going at this Caitlin whole thing and back and forth with AJ actually for quite some time, and then they threw in the whole thing about the boyfriend about a month and a half ago, and I don't know what direction this was originally supposed to take, but in a way it kind of ended up exactly the way it should have, with AJ being a vengeful, spiteful psychopath and wanting to take out her old friend and take the WWE Women's or Divas title, because that's the one thing she hasn't had yet.
I expect they've had this idea for a long time. And keep in mind, anything can change, everybody. But my guess is that AJ is winning the title, and they are going to do the deal where her and Ziggler are boyfriend-girlfriend double champion. So that would be my guess for tonight. Could always happen on Raw, but I think it's happening tonight. So we'll see. Back with more of a preview in a moment. Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here to talk all the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts over the last week, and a lot of stuff to get into today. So let's continue on with our preview. Of course, we're here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 92, 94, and 794, XM Radio, Channel 208. Streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, and TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone, as well as the Sirius Satellite Radio app on your smartphone. So many ways to listen to this show. We're talking about the WWE Payback show here, and lots of different matches. We've talked about Ziggler, Del Rio, Caitlin, AJ Lee. I'm expecting a title change in the AJ match, and expecting another title change in the three-way, Wade Barrett, Kurt Axel, and The Miz. I think Curtis Axel leaving with the title. They're giving him a push. My feeling is that the current mindset in WWE is, let's put belts on guys we're pushing, which of course is very different from the what they had been doing in the past, which was, let's put belts on guys and then beat them. I guess they figured if we put the belt on the guy, it's big news for the guy, so then we can beat the guy because he's a champion, and the guy will still get over. I don't know what their idea was. I never thought it worked. I think if you put the belt on a guy who you're pushing, then both get over. The guy gets over for being pushed and for being the champion, and the belt gets over bigger. I think that's what they're doing with the Shield and all those titles, and I think that's what they're going to try with Curtis Axel as well. I don't expect them to give him the belt and then beat him right and left. He is undefeated at this point, and I think that's going to continue today. Thoughts on that three-way?
Has there been any investigation into whether you give a guy a belt like a Wade Barrett, for example, and then you come out with a limited edition doll or action figure, I guess you would call it now, with that belt, and that's why they do it? Because that would be the only thing that would actually make any sense, because to see it on TV, to see guys like Wade Barrett win the Intercontinental belt and be beaten like a drum, especially when they need new stars. And it's hard to imagine Wade Barrett not being a big star with very little help. Hopefully it works in reverse. Like what you're talking about, they seem with the Shield with the, when it comes to the tag titles with CM Punk when it came to the world title and not wanting to take it off Cena too early or anything like that. It seems like that mentality has changed, and hopefully there's still a little bit of the old mentality, which is when you take the Intercontinental belt off someone, then they can start winning again, because Antonio Cesaro is one case, and it's a separate case from Wade Barrett, who, you know, they've been talking about who should turn heel. Should it be Daniel Bryan? Should it be Randy Orton? All of this other stuff. Really, Wade Barrett is a guy who should probably be pushed, not super high or anything like that, but he should at least be at Sheamus' level, at least right underneath that. And hopefully they do that now that they're getting the belt off of him and they have no reason to keep weighing him down.
All right. Also on this show, we've got Dean Ambrose versus Kane for the U.S. title. I don't expect a title change here, but we saw this match on Raw and it was all right. Probably virtually the exact same match here on this show.
Yeah, probably the case. And Dean Ambrose winning, I would assume winning, you know, not exactly clean if the Shield runs out or something like that, which I guess then could transition right into the tag title match, which would make sense.
All right, we've got the tag title match, Shield and Daniel Bryan and Randy Orton. Tag team match for the titles, obviously. And seeing as how Daniel Bryan finally ended the six-man undefeated streak of the Shield, which actually, we should talk about that for a second here. Shield had obviously lost in a six-man elimination on Raw, but they had never lost in traditional six-man competition. They finally did on SmackDown. Daniel Bryan got the win. First off, my guess is that means that Daniel Bryan and Orton are not winning the titles here tonight. Maybe Orton's going to turn, as has been teased for a while. I don't know. But I, believe it or not, I'm almost happy that the Shield finally lost as a six-man unit, because now you can do finishes. And anyway, I saw just about one too many DQs. That's the problem. I saw one too many DQs, and thank God now maybe we can have some finishes in some of these six-man matches.
Yeah, that's true, and I think, too, it's just, yeah, it shows the lack of, again, they did some with the Usos, they've done some with some other teams, but not really a whole heck of a lot when it comes to the Shield, and it's out of the way. They kind of did it without a whole lot of fanfare or anything like that. I don't know how much it will be brought up on tonight's show. Hopefully it is. So you kind of have that sports build to it where it's like, you know, hey, this is what you missed Friday on SmackDown. But no matter what, it would be insanity to take the belts off the Shield, even if you wanted this to continue on. There's no point in putting the belts on Bryan and Orton. So I think the Shield ends up getting the win. I don't know how they do it. And again, I don't know if Randy Orton turns. I don't know if Daniel Bryan turns. I wouldn't think that would be the case, and it probably shouldn't be the case. But it wouldn't stun me if one of them do, just because you got to figure CM Punk later on in this show is going to come out as a huge babyface.
I would be stunned if they turn Daniel Bryan. They need Daniel Bryan as a babyface. He's so hot as a babyface right now that I think now would be the wrong time to turn him.
And you know, for what they want out of marketing, too, and I know that there's wrestling fans that are just grabbing their heads right now and slamming it against the radio because they don't like hearing about that sort of stuff, but it's true. And yet Daniel Bryan is far more marketable to kids in a lot of ways than Randy Orton is. Again, if they decide to keep the beard, which I think they should trim down a little bit, and we talked about that last week, and with the merchandise and everything else, the fact that he was so featured heavily on Saturday Morning Slam doing rapping and all that other stuff, it's, you know, for what they, you know, seemingly want overall as a company, I would definitely have Daniel Bryan, you know, stay the good guy.
Then we've got what do we got here? What are we gonna talk about? Jericho and Punk, since you mentioned that. CM Punk, of course, is returning, and expect him to be a gigantic babyface. He's, you know, it's in Chicago. What more can you say? And the big question is, like, do they do a switch? Do they do a double turn? Do they bother? Is Punk just going to turn babyface? I don't know. I kind of figure that they're going to do like a Punk comes out, plays total babyface. Jericho doesn't play heel, but he works the heel role. And maybe at the end he offers a handshake and low blows him or whatever. I do know that all I know is that I think Punk's going to turn. Could be wrong, but He could work as kind of a tweener for a while before doing the big split with Paul Heyman. They've talked about Jericho being a heel since long before WrestleMania. It hasn't happened. So it's a lot of turns in a short period of time. Maybe we're expecting too much. Everybody turning all at once. Maybe they're going to hold off some of these so that others will have impact. But I think at the end of the day, Punk, maybe not tonight, but within the next month or so, is going to be back to being a full-fledged babyface.
Well, is Mark Henry coming out tomorrow night on Raw as a babyface? I mean, they certainly seem like they were going that direction with him, with pulling the bus and all that sort of stuff in his feud with Sheamus, where realistically, you know, it's kind of like this thing with standouts. Like, Sheamus does more heel things, even if it's in the most Bugs Bunny, Looney Tunes type of fashion than standout or Mark Henry did. But you also have that one, you know, kind of looming as well. But I guess you could always go the direction with Chris Jericho saying, hey, you know, Paul Heyman finally paid me back that $250, you know, after this match, if he does decide to go dirty on CM Punk, and, you know, say, you know, with that payment in full, he was the first one to really give me a chance in the States, and you know what, I'm a Paul Heyman guy.
Somehow I don't think Paul Heyman's given his $250 that he owes him.
That's probably the case.
Although that would be an awesome, awesome angle.
You know, everybody could line up. Imagine that. That could be the next ECW documentary. It's everybody, you know, backstage trying to get money back out of Paul Heyman, which, you know, I kind of wish they would have done that with Eric Bischoff in WWE when he first went in. Just, he's got to go back and now face everybody.
You know, it'd be awesome if Jericho turned on Punk, and Punk demanded an explanation. And Jericho said, well, Paul owed me $250 from my last ECW show. I never got it. I've been waiting almost 20 years for it. And you know what? He finally paid it back. And Punk could scream and rant about how you kicked me low for $250, blah, blah, blah. And Jericho could explain that, in fact, Paul paid him back with interest. So it was now a good $2,000 here in 2013.
I like it. You know what? You could even go higher than that, even though, you know, you shouldn't have too many overinflated fines and things like that in professional wrestling. Because of the money he makes off of Brock Lesnar and the money he's made off the back of CM Punk, CM Punk could even say he stole the money from him, but it could even be $20,000, which is enough for Jericho to get one bulb replaced in that jacket of his.
That's right. That's right. You should have said that Paul owed him $50, and with interest over the last 20 years, it's now worth $2 million. Come on, heels have to lie and be dastardly.
That's true. That's true. And Jericho, when you wear a jacket like that, you know you can do some over-the-top lying.
John Cena and Ryback, three stages of hell. Everybody's pretty much expecting that Ryback wins the lumberjack match, and then John Cena wins tables and ambulance. And I've been told there's a possibility. Originally, the idea I was told was that this is a match, it's a showcase match for Cena to get him over big for whatever's coming. Over the last week, I've been told that they may actually do, yes, a rematch at the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. So this may not be the end of this feud. And if that's the case, and I expect a screw job in one match or another, they could also do a deal where, you know, one of the Lumberjacks turns on John Cena to lead to him losing the Lumberjack match. And somehow that plays into the story and setting up John Cena's next opponent. However, if you do something like that, it kind of takes away from the rest of the match where somebody turned on John Cena, yet John Cena is now going to do two more falls still with Ryback, and that other guy is going to disappear. So some sort of schmoz is going to happen in this lumberjack, it appears, and then Cena goes on to win the overall series.
Unless that's how they do it with a DQ in the beginning where somebody needs to win two falls, although, again, that probably wouldn't be the best of ideas. I think more likely, you know, what you're saying, they split 1-1 somehow, and I don't know how it happens with Ryback, whether he goes for a spear somehow off of something elevated and ends up in like the ambulance window or something like that, and you know, John Cena gets it backed out or something like that. I think that's probably going to be the case. If they don't go to a finish, though, I again, is anybody beating down the door to see this show, let alone seeing them in a rematch later?
Doubtful. Doubtful. Show is starting in moments after we go off the air. We'll be back in just a moment after this commercial break. Talk a little bit more about it. And then UFC. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next hour and a half talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, 794, XM Radio, Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. You can also check us out on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. Search Sports Byline USA or Wrestling Observer Live. Also, the Sirius Satellite Radio app on your smartphone. So many ways to hear the show. And, of course, if you head to WrestlingObserver.com, not only can you hear this show live every Sunday afternoon, but all of our radio shows for subscribers are available as well. It's $10.99 a month. With that, you get radio shows every single day. Last night, Mike Sempervivi and Dave Meltzer alone did two radio shows. Actually, a three-hour show split into two shows. If you're itching for audio today, sign up and right off the bat, 3 hours worth of audio. Dave and I are going to be back later on tonight with another hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, reviewing the WWE Payback show, and a lot of other stuff on the website as well. Every show we've ever done is available in the archives dating back to 2005. It's a lot of audio, tons of audio, more audio than you could ever get through if you really wanted to. It's a lot of stuff. So check it out. If you like this show, guaranteed you will love a subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. New radio shows every day, archived radio shows, Figure Four Weekly, Wrestling Observer Newsletter, archives of both newsletters. It's so much stuff. So try it for a month. If you don't like it, that's fine. You never have to sign up again. But I think if you like this show, you will absolutely love a full access $10.99 subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. Less than you'd pay for lunch for Father's Day, and gets you a full month of access. So head up there and check that out. We're talking about the WWE Payback show, which, of course, is coming to us from Rosemont, Illinois, the Allstate Arena, Chicago. Basically Chicago. And it's coming up moments after the show goes off the air. And, in fact, pretty soon here, this pre-show match with Sheamus and Damian Sandow is going to start. And, Mike, before we go any further, Raw from Monday, the final big show leading to this particular battle. Any thoughts on the Raw show?
Not really. I don't know. I don't know what they're doing with the Triple H, Vince McMahon thing. I mean, I kind of know. I obviously whined about the fact they didn't do the sports build, you know, exit to the Curtis Axel Triple H match. And again, if you would have went that direction, you have an easy way to say, you know what, you need to retire and you need to be in the office because you have all this experience, you have all of this skill, and hey, that young kid's not in your league, maybe Triple H, but you know what, he's on the up and comer and he hurt you, and do that sort of thing, and then you had a way into whatever is going on here with Triple H and Vince, but instead, they've kind of played it up, you know, slapstick meets soap opera style, which they often do, where they do the, you know, the whole rabbit season, duck season thing with, you know, do you want the match, do you not want the match, the very cartoonish the way it was. Vince, you know, stops the match, Triple H starts the match, and really the only thing that at the end of the day came out of all that, and I think people are interested in seeing what happens, but I don't think how they've gone about things makes them any more, they want to see it any more than that. What you've ended up doing is really not damage Curtis Axel, but the one thing that should have been really coming out of that storyline, attached to it was the ascension of Curtis Axel, which, you know, 2 weeks in there with Triple H, and it doesn't happen. And on top of it, they didn't do a good job putting him over, really, with Vince McMahon talking about him of, well, yeah, he's good, but, you know, it just, the whole thing has kind of fallen flat for me. So, this was just leading into this pay-per-view. It's a long-term thing for them, so we have to see where it goes, but don't have a whole lot of confidence inspired inside right now about it.
Yeah, if you love the McMahon family drama, get ready, everybody. There's more of it coming. Probably all summer long. Of course, Stephanie has kids, and guess what? It's summer vacation. So that means that she could take the kids and the nanny on the road every single Monday night. So be ready for more Stephanie. Be ready for more Vince. Be ready for more Hunter. Question is, where in God's name does this even lead? You know what I mean? I USA likes McMahon family drama. They like that. But it's like, Are we just going to have drama for the sake of drama, or is this actually going to lead to a Curtis Axel match, or are they all going to choose somebody to feud? What's happening here?
I don't know. And why wasn't it Brock? Because, you know, initially it should have been Brock was the one who caused this damage, which led to not being able to beat Curtis Axel, which would lead to the McMahon family drama. And not only have they written Curtis Axel out of the mix, you know, Brock Lesnar, it's just an afterthought anymore on how they even got to this point. It's like, what exactly are they fighting over? What are they fighting for? Yeah, what's all this fighting about?
It's a good question. I don't know. Maybe we'll see more of it tonight on the pay-per-view. But it seems for the time being, at least, that there's not going to be a Triple H Curtis Axel match on Raw tomorrow night. But I suppose anything can change. So there you go. How about Caitlyn and Big E and their secret admirer gimmick?
You know, Caitlyn can't act, and that's okay. She's definitely got presence. I mean, it's kind of funny when you think of that season of NXT where they had that really tall girl that was supposed to be Vicky's protege, and then the next week they dragged Caitlyn out there, and she, you know, ultimately ends up winning the thing and being there with AJ. You know, she's come a long way since then. Obviously, the acting is, it's still got something to you know, be desired, at least still leave something to be desired. But AJ playing off of her, I thought was really, really good. And I thought she did a great job. I thought Big E, for the most part, did a really good job as well. So even though the acting could be a lot better, then again, if I have that much of an issue with it, I'll pop in the Velvet Sky match beforehand.
You know, a lot of people are kind of critical of WWE and you know, they're going after football players and athletes and trying to turn them into pro wrestlers, and that's kind of their new gimmick right now. I mean, they're taking some indie guys, obviously. You know, you got guys from The Shield, Daniel Bryan, you know, Sammy Callahan's being signed and Samurai Del Sol. But point is, they're going after a lot of real athletes as well, and sometimes people are critical of that. But you know what? That's where they got Big E Langston, and he's only been in this business for 3 years. And he's really good for being in this business 3 years. He's got a good presence. He plays his character well. He's got good interviews. He's got decent work in the ring. I like Big E Langston.
It's, you know, it's not about getting football players. It, you know, because the business was built off of that in a lot of ways. Wahoo McDaniel and Ernie Ladd, and the list goes on and on and on with, you know, guys who were failed football players who got into wrestling. That's not the issue. It's finding the guy who's willing to listen, who's willing to learn. Because again, I know you didn't play sports, you know, as far as like major team sports, Brian. But
the hell are you talking about?
Well, with gymnastics and everything else, you learn a work ethic, and that's
right.
That's one of the reasons that Jim Ross and a lot of these other guys, they didn't love the football players who came in the big head with the big head and thought they were better or bigger than the business. But if you came in willing to learn, you've already gone through hell. I mean, just it's a loose example, but look at Sean Jordan in the UFC. I mean, again, it's not exactly the same sort of parallel. But when you're out there and you have to go to training and you actually have to lift and you have to learn how to do and you have to, you know, different things and you have to be disciplined, that carries into your wrestling training. And if you do those things and you listen and you get better, it's great to have football players because you have big athletes who have a lot of dexterity who tend to be Titus's own, you know, Titus O'Neil size, if not bigger. And obviously they like that sort of thing. And, you know, it makes for a great package. It's, the issue is when you have guys who, you know, I'm not saying you're Ricky Ortiz's, but guys who may have been, you know, only minor fans, if they were fans at all, and just are looking for something physical and what they think is a quick buck and is, you know, fun and just acting. When you have guys like that, that's where you run into the issues.
All right. Any other? I think that's all of the major notes from Raw there. That was that about covers the important stuff. And let's talk a little bit. I have not seen. Let's start with we got a lot of shows to review. So let's start with World Series of Fighting. I have not seen the show. I know all about the main event, the shocking 1 minute chokeout destruction of John Fitch by Josh Berkman. Tell us about the show.
It really wasn't any good. I like Boss Rudin and I like Todd Harris, and I, you know, for some reason, it's not like it's my money or my network. I have some empathy towards the NBC Sports Television Network and the radio network, which is not, to put it mildly, has not gotten off to the best start overall. And, you know, the World Series of Fighting, I'm again, like Bellator, I hope these things are successes so guys have other places to work and they have other places to learn. And, you know, it's granted, you don't want to have to be overly saturated with too much of anything, but, you know, the sport's still growing, and I still think there's room for other people to provide a little bit of competition, at least in their own way. And I was hoping the World Series of Fighting could do that, but this show, again, John Fitch quickly getting choked out by Josh Berkman, you know, it's one of those freak things that happened. Steve Mazzagatti really should be ashamed of himself for missing the call on that. And basically, Berkman was the one who let go of his guillotine choke. Mazzagatti wasn't even close to being in position to see if John Fitch was going to be okay. I mean, he was literally just standing there, probably would have kept standing there as Fitch turned blue and he wouldn't have been able to see it. But the layout of the show was weird. The boxing event that they aired before the show actually ended early, so they just threw it to coverage of the World Series of Fighting. So if you tuned in before 11 o'clock p.m. Eastern time, you actually got some bonus material coming out of California. But the show itself, again, it was dark. It didn't look all that good. The announcer, when he gave the apparently there was a Boost Mobile phone. They have a huge tie-in, I guess, and do some advertising. They even did a product placement there where the announcer was supposed to give the phone to Josh Berkman and completely screwed that up. And it's just, unfortunately, and I don't mean to come down hard on him or anything, it's just it came across as a big-time minor league production. And obviously they're going to have that stigma anyway with guys like Jacob Volkman and John Fitch and guys who have either been jettisoned or lost their way out of the UFC. They already have that hanging over their heads. But, again, the announcing is really good, but the overall production of the show and how it came across was, it was very, it wasn't even Friday Night's Fight-ish, but it was along those lines where, it was just like basically a C-level show.
So do you feel that... I mean, was Fitch just caught? Was it just bad day? Was Dana right? He's 35 years old.
It was like Hendricks. I mean, it was, you know, it was.
Yeah, but that's two bad days in like three fights now.
Well, that's, yeah, and that, well, that's where you start asking the questions, obviously. But, you know, it was just, there were a couple of shots that Berkman landed, and then Fitch just, you know, grabbed on to drag him down and left his neck open, and just Berkman was able to get it in so deep right away that it was just one of those freak things. I don't think if they fight 10 times that happens 10 times. It might happen once like it did, but I don't think it'll happen 10 times again. It was just one of those things. You know, one that was worse than that was, the fight previous where Tyson Steele fought Steve Carl in a welterweight fight. And, you know, Carl landed a couple shots, failed to take down the attempt, or Steele tried to take down the attempt, missed, and just... he left his neck up there for so long. It wasn't like it was an instantaneous thing where Carl grabbed a guillotine or a rear naked and choked him out. He left it out there for a little while before he did it. So it wasn't the most embarrassing submission on the show, but it was just one of those things where he got caught. And again, this is what, his second loss in three fights and in a new company after talking all of that noise about the UFC, how he wasn't treated right and how he'll never be able to pay for his vacation home, which... a couple more performances like this, he's going to have to sell that vacation home.
All right, everybody, we're head to a break. When we come back, we got UFC to talk about. We got a little bit of a preview of the AAA pay-per-view, which you can check out today, and a lot of other stuff. So hold that dial, as they say. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Man, we spent an hour here talking the WWE pay-per-view. Payback, of course, is coming up later on this afternoon on pay-per-view. And last night, UFC 161, Rashad Evans, Dan Henderson was the main event. And there's an iPay-per-view today. The AAA iPay-per-view, which is available on Ustream. Talk about that a little bit later on. And last segment, we talked about the World Series of Fighting. John Fitch being, he was destroyed quick by Josh Berkman. Now Fitch is now claiming that him and Berkman are 1-1. And so he's saying, well, what the hell? Why don't we do a rematch for the title, he adds, coming off this loss. And is this a fight that that anyone's going to care about? Or is there a fight in World Series of Fighting that would be... what's a good next fight for the World Series of Fighting?
Boss Rudin against Ray Sefo.
I don't think you're going to see that one, my man.
Well, we're going to see Ray Sefo, the figurehead president of the company, decided to announce that in a very plastic mannequin-like fashion that... I never retired, and I want to reach that century mark as fights go. I believe he's had about 93 or 94, and then he said he's going to call it quits. And the main event for the next show, Spong and Deonda, backed up by Huckaba and Sefo.
Huh.
Big money is going to be pouring in to the World Series of Fighting August 10th in Ontario, California.
I'll say.
Ray Sefo, I like Ray Sefo. Ray Sefo is like having Mark Hunt around and lots of other guys. I got to see these guys in K1 in the 90s, and it just amazes me that they're still around. And because they're older than me, I would like them to keep fighting so I feel young.
Let me tell you something. It's not going to make you feel younger. I feel 38 today. I know I just had my birthday, cheap plug. But yeah, I feel 38 today, no matter how old some of these fighters are. I just think they're a lot tougher than me. All right, we're going to head to a break, everybody. When we come back, hour number two, we got a lot of stuff to talk about. We'll talk about this UFC show and so much more. So stick around, everybody. We'll be back in about 7 minutes. You are listening to Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, 794, XM Radio, Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Got a lot of news to get into today, not the least of which is the UFC 161 pay-per-view. We spent the first hour talking a lot of different stuff. The WWE Payback Show, the World Series of Fighting from Friday night. We got the AAA pay-per-view to talk about here, as well as noted, UFC 161. Now, Mike, before we get into UFC 161 in the next segment, let's talk a little more about Payback since it starts immediately after the show goes off the air. Would you ever bet money on a pro wrestling card?
You know, I would say that the old answer would be, well, yes, immediately after I talked to some people, but as you talked about earlier on, they could be in on all this chicanery that takes place, and that's why they make all these last-minute decisions and wacky things happening. But I would have real problems in doing it, other than, of course, The Undertaker at WrestleMania, but I'm not a big fan on betting on favorites, you know, especially with, you know, incredibly long odds. So I would say no. And in fact, it amazes me that they actually had a minus 1400 line for like an Alberto Del Rio Dolph Ziggler match. I mean, with what's gone on in that feud anyway, if you just looked at this from a betting point of view, I would be all over taking the underdog in that fight. Because again, you put down 100 bucks of the specter of winning 1400 in a worked pro wrestling match where they constantly go back and forth with their scripts. I think I would put out some money on that just for the hell of it.
But again, all that means is it doesn't mean Ziggler's losing the title. It could just mean the match gets thrown out and Del Rio gets his hand raised, but Ziggler's still the champion. So I can't, and again, you know, because of DQ finishes, they could change the finish without actually changing the finish, if that makes sense. Actually, that made no sense. I'm going to head to a break right now, everybody. I'll try to gather my thoughts when we come back. Listen to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling. Actually, the next hour. We've been here for an hour already. Pro wrestling and mixed martial arts every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94 and 794, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. I think what I was trying to say is that with pro wrestling, let's say you've got... you've got long odds on Dolph Ziggler. Okay, you can have Dolph Ziggler lose the belt, so Alberto Del Rio becomes the champion, or If that gets out and you don't want to do the title change, you can just do a DQ. Same guy wins, no title changes hands. They can make some changes based on odds that maybe you wouldn't be able to make in an MMA fight.
Well, that's probably true.
Roy Nelson either loses or he wins. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but then you can also have prop bets, too. I mean, there's always prop bets attached to these where it's, you know, does Nelson get knocked out? There's odds on who wins the round. There's odds on finishes. There's odds on all the sorts of other stuff like that as well.
Well, I think they do that with pro wrestling because if you recall, the last let's see, I forget what match it was, but basically the odds were that somebody was going to lose the original fall, but the other person was going to win the final fall, even though it was a one-fall match. So they basically, in the odds, revealed that the finish was going to be a restart.
Now, are there pushes in this? I mean, say there's a 60-minute draw, which doesn't happen anymore, but, I mean, do you bet separately on a double DQ? I mean, if you put up money, do you lose that money, or because it's a push or a draw, do you get your money back?
I don't know.
I'm blaming the British for this because I know that the UK loves to gamble, and I know just about betting on anything from snooker to darts to football to anything else is completely legal over there. There's too many restrictions here in the States. I'm going to blame them for that. They've had to come up with the ones to bet on pro wrestling.
All right, take us through this UFC 161 show.
Well, this was the... Yeah, one thing about the UFC this year, there was a lot of talk about everything that's gone on, and you've said to yourself, you know what, it's better than last year when it comes to all these injuries and all these badly jinxed shows and all that sort of stuff. And this show, their debut in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, was supposed to be a relatively big one. It was supposed to have Henan Burrell face off against Annie Wineland for the interim bantamweight championship that Miguel Torres who holds that title? Been out for so long I can't remember. Dominic Cruz,
yeah.
Yeah, so Dominic Cruz and the interim champion, Henan Burrell, gets hurt. Doesn't look like he's hurt too terribly badly and will be back some point in the later summer. But that was supposed to be the headline fight on this show with Rashad Evans and Dan Henderson being a little bit of star power underneath of it. And unfortunately, that didn't end up happening because of the injuries. Antonio Rogério Nogueira was supposed to face off against Shogun Hua in a rematch in the co-main event, and Nogueira had to pull out of the fight, which led to Chael Sonnen possibly talking himself in with the fight for Nogueira, but then obviously that got thrown out. We end up with Stipe Miocic against Roy Nelson, who, again, Miocic was supposed to fight Soa Poyle. Nelson was supposed to be having some time off. He just fought 6 weeks ago in Newark on the undercard of the John Jones fight, but he decided to step up and step in and run his mouth about his last fight in the UFC, or at least under his current deal, and things didn't work out too well across the board. They got a sold-out crowd, and I think people were relatively happy with how the fights turned out, but unfortunately on the main card there was not a whole lot of super memorable memories coming out of the show. Probably the best thing on it was on that show, and the main card was Alexis Davis and Rossi Sexton, the women's bantamweight fight. And Alexis Davis, who had fought in Strikeforce and had a really good fight against Sarah Kaufman, was looking to kind of introduce herself to the public, and she did a pretty good job with that. Did some damage to Sexton. But I think probably the star coming out of it was Sexton, who's 35 years old. She's been around for forever in UK MMA, and she was just so game and gritty. Even though she was beaten, she won a round, Brian, and I don't know if you had a chance to see the show, but she actually won the first round despite the fact that she was trapped in a triangle for 2.5 minutes. Unfortunately for Davis, she just could not get the thing cinched on there just right, and Rossi just completely waylaid her and busted her open as she laid on her back with punches to the face. So it really was not the most auspicious debut there for Alexis Davis, but she ends up getting the unanimous decision win. The show opened with Sean Jordan and Pat Barry, and we had all taken Pat Barry on the website in this poll, but I think we all probably had the thought in the back of our minds as well that, you know what? Sean Jordan is a good raw prospect, and Pat Barry tends sometimes to not look completely awesome. He'll either kill you with leg kicks and look very good, or he loses the fight, and he was knocked out in only 59 seconds. Jordan landed a couple good shots on him, and that was it.
You know, I should note here before we continue on that I got I didn't see the show, but I was getting feedback during the show. A lot of people didn't like the show. And it's funny because the last UFC in Brazil, either set or tied the record, depending on how you want to look at it, for the most submission finishes on a single show. And they followed it up here with what I believe was the show with the most decisions on a single show. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 decisions here on this event.
It made it very easy to decide knockout and submission of the night.
That's right. There was only one TKO, Sean Jordan, Pat Barry, and there was only one submission, James Krause and Sam Stout, guillotine choke. So that's a lot of decisions. That is a lot of decisions on a show.
I think if you take the entirety of the show, there were some good things because I thought James Krause and Sam Stout was fun. Pearson and Robertson was also fun as well. But I think probably what's going to end up coming out of this was the decisions that were announced. Jake Shields and Tyrone Woodley. Shields defeated Woodley by split decision, and the judges' scores went like this: Jake Shields 29-28, 29-28, and then Tyrone Woodley 30-27. Which, if you look at it on paper, you'd say, oh my God, this is one of those disastrous judging scores, and this is what's wrong with MMA and this, that, and the other. And that really wasn't the case. You could have easily given Tyrone Woodley. I thought Shields, you had to give Shields at least one. But Woodley at 30-27 is really not a shock. And it, more realistically, they probably all should have had it like I had it, which was 29-29. Shields was very busy. He was very active. He tried for a lot of takedowns, 18 of them, I believe, in fact. And Tyrone Woodley, though, stuffed all of them. He was physically more impressive. When he landed his punches, he would knock Shields back a little bit, and he looked like he hurt him. But the problem was he was only throwing those one at a time. And even though his corner was screaming at him nonstop in the second and definitely into the third round, that he needed to pick it up and take a little bit more of it away from Jake Shields, he just either could not do it or chose not to do it, and continued to land the one punch and continued to stave off Jake Shields, but definitely didn't really truly win the fight. Neither one of the guys did.
The show itself, I this is one of my talking points. I won't lie. And I don't even know why I'm bringing it up, except I just want to bring it up again. But I remember back in the day when I set my DVR and UFC shows would run over, and I would always be infuriated, like, why can't you just end the show on time? And I'd hear over and over that it's a sporting event. Sometimes it's going to go over. It's a sporting event. They can't help it. And this show, to me, is like a good example. Except for two fights, every single solitary fight went the distance. And you know what? The show still ended on time. Because it's possible, everybody. I just want to get that out there. I'll move on with my life now. But I just want to get that out there that it is, in fact, possible to end an MMA event on time if your intention is to end the show on time.
Well, they were. I tell you what, they took every little last bit of time out of the undercard. 48 seconds, I think, was all that was left to separate that show going off the air and leading into the pay-per-view.
That's right, but they did it because you can do it. Because it is possible to do that. We're going to run down the main event. Any thoughts on the split decision and Roy Nelson's future and more when we come back from the break? Poor Big Country. He took a big gamble and it didn't pay off. But I still think you're going to see this man again. We're going to do a break. Back in a moment. Observer Live, Sports Byline, Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here for the next 40 minutes talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, 794, Channel 208 on XM Radio, sometimes Sirius Channel 92. Streaming online, WrestlingObserver.com. Of course, the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. Search Wrestling Observer. Search Sports Byline. Of course, there's the Sirius Satellite Radio app on your smartphone as well. So many ways to listen to this show. And Mike, Big Country. Big Country Roy Nelson took a big gamble. taking this fight, the final fight on his contract with Stipe Miocic, ended up losing a decision. I believe he absorbed, I swear to God, over 400 shots. He absorbed more punches in this match than any heavyweight has ever absorbed in a fight without getting knocked out. He lost a decision unanimously to Stipe Miocic. His contract is up. Dana White has indicated that they've made Roy an offer. They're willing to talk. Obviously, him and Roy Nelson are not on the same page virtually ever. But I do think that we'll see Roy Nelson back. What are your thoughts on his performance and his future?
Well, Roy Nelson got his ass kicked. There's no other way to say it. You know, a lot of... Joe Rogan said there is something special about Roy Nelson. There is a charisma. He's a big, fat guy. You know, he's obviously, he's very, very strong. He's got great muscle control. He is truly a black belt in jiu-jitsu. But with all of that said, he was winded in the first round, and he was getting pummeled in the first round, and he cannot move side to side because of the way he is physically, and, you know, at least as fast as he used to anymore. And Stipe Miocic just used his 80-inch, you know, wingspan, which was, you know, 7 inches, and I think from underarm to fist, which is, you know, wingspan doesn't mean a whole lot. It really is truly the underarm to the fist, because when you're throwing punches, that's how you're throwing them. You're not throwing them by, you know, gliding in on somebody and smacking them with both wings. But it looked even longer for Miocic, and Nelson, just the only thing he had and the only thing he seems to have anymore for all of the talk over the years about the black belt in jiu-jitsu is the overhand right hand. And he's so reliant upon it, and he was so reliant on it in this bout that he never even got off the ground. He was breathing heavy, and he was beaten up pretty badly in the first round. And like you said, it was an incredible pummeling. I'm actually going to bring up the stats right now, but they showed them after the fight. And there were 137 significant strikes landed for Miocic, which was just about 70% for him. 117 of those were head strikes. That was 65%. 21 leg strikes. He was 21 for 21 there. And in the clinch, he landed 90% of his punches, too, at 36. And Nelson wasn't anywhere near him. Nelson landed 23 strikes. And again, you know, there should have been a slaughter rule put in. You know, if you ever wanted...
Hold on a second. 23 in the entire fight?
23, yeah. I'm actually, you know, pulling it up the round breakdown now.
So
but
23 versus 430 or something like that?
Oh, yeah.
That's unfortunate.
That's.
Let's be fair to Big Roy. His contract was up in July, so he either took a fight here or he wasn't going to get another fight. And he did take this fight, I don't know if I'm saying short notice, but he fought fairly recently, if I recall correctly. His last fight actually was, let's see, Chick Congo.
John Jones fight. He knocked out Chick Congo.
Yeah, April. So, and he was on a 3-fight win streak. So he put a lot on the line here by deciding to take this fight right before his contract expired against a tough guy. And he paid for it. He paid for it. But at least if you can say nothing else about Roy, dude's a fighter.
He definitely is a fighter, but when you're a fighter who lands 23 of 127 significant strikes, granted that Miocic is a fine wrestler, you know, that needs to be said, but when you're, you know, suppose, again, a black belt in jiu-jitsu, and you're getting your face punched in, and the only really thing you can do, or probably should be doing when you're overhand right, the one thing that you have isn't working, would be at least try to make the attempt to drag onto this guy and take him down, because you know with Miocic's experience level, he's not going to choke you out. He's not better than you are on the ground. He's not a better grappler than you are. But Nelson couldn't even bowling ball his way into doing that, and it was very disappointing. One, because it does prove with, you know, this train that was leading on for Roy Nelson and a title fight is now off the tracks. It shows that even though he is one of the better heavyweights out there, and he can probably beat 90% of the MMA, you know, heavyweights walking the planet, but the fact of the matter is he's looking like he's a gatekeeper and a gatekeeper only, because he loses the big fights against big-name opponents. I mean, he lost his only big one in the IFL. He lost that one there, and yes, he went through Kimbo Slice, and he went through Brendan Schaub and won the Ultimate Fighter, but he just seems to have a problem. And if he's got this type of problem with Miocic, as Dave talked about last night, what do you think Cain Velasquez would do to him? And this whole thing is really compounded by the fact that people know that Roy Nelson and Dana White aren't on the same page and they don't like each other. And even though you're probably going to see Roy Nelson back in the UFC because he's smart enough to do it, and so is Dana White, even though Dana looks at Roy as a horrible representative for the UFC as far as how the dude looks and how he talks and how he talks about the company, at the end of the day, you know, for right now, people will still pay to see Roy Nelson fight. There's always that chance that he does knock a dude out. So I think business sense and acumen is going to win at the end of the day. But with all of the stuff that Nelson talked leading into this fight, too, and you talk about the gamble he took taking the fight on 6 weeks' notice, that were, or, you know, less than 6 weeks after fighting, he did more of that, you know, in the interviews leading up, talking to Ariel Helwani and talking to a lot of other people, taking shots at Daniel Cormier, taking shots at the UFC, bringing up the fact that you can lose and still get in the title fights. He made that crack before the fight.
It's true.
He did everything to tweak and rankle your employer, which, you know, that's good. And that happens in sports. And you know, there's an adversarial thing that in sports where a lot of that is just business. But with that said, when you already have a bear that you're poking, like a John Fitch or somebody like that, and you keep poking him, the first chance he has to get revenge on you, he'll do it. And you know what? The asking price for Roy Nelson, even though the UFC can still pay more than anybody else, you know, they give him a little bit less because, well, they can.
Yeah, I like Roy, but I don't know. I don't know. I think he should keep getting fights. There's a lot of guys he can just have fights with. But as far as being in the title picture, I don't know if that's ever going to happen. Don't know if that's ever going to happen. It's hard when you get...
Let me ask you a question. Because you have rolled jiu-jitsu with lots of large men.
I have. And I'm also now 38 years old. I could tell you that I try to keep myself in good shape. I try to eat right. I train every single day. But I ain't 20. You know what I mean? And when you're Roy Nelson and you're also starting to get old and you're really heavy and you're eating a lot of McDonald's, I mean, it's even harder. So, you know, Dana likes to make a lot of comments about his weight and everything like that. But I mean, there is something to it. I mean, yeah, when I was young, I could survive on McDonald's too, but you get a little older and this McDonald's is not carrying you through a training session like it used to. Now you got to eat right. And I don't think Roy Nelson is eating right. And he's, what is he now? He's 36 years old, about to turn 37, actually. Turns 37 in 4 days. Turns 37 in 4 days and not taking care of himself. And it's going to be a very, very fast, very fast downward slide. This ain't Randy Couture. This isn't a guy that's... It's actually kind of funny because Anderson Silva is a huge fan of Burger King, but I don't picture him like eating Burger King every night. It's just like a sponsor, and it's something that he likes as a treat, not something he eats every day. But you gotta take care of yourself if you want to fight into the 30s and 40s. You just have to. And Roy doesn't do that. And if this guy wants a title shot, I'm telling you, you've got to make a big change. Otherwise, it's just not going to happen. It just is not going to happen.
Unless you get some help, which, as we found out in California this week, you will not be able to do anymore. If you've already got the help in trying to defy age and having testosterone replacement therapy, you'll still be able to do it. But now nobody else, at least for the time being, will be able to use that one out there.
Now, Dan Anderson is on TRT, 42 years old, still fighting at a top level. He arguably could have won last night against Rashad Evans, because it was a split decision. You know, one judge going another way, he would have won this fight. Take us through this battle.
Yeah, and I disagree with that a little bit. I actually had Evans winning, you know, especially the first two rounds, even though a lot of people gave Henderson that round. But Evans came out confident. You know, he had a really wide boxing stance, and his speed, you know, that Henderson is a freak.
Did he have his swagger back?
He did in a little bit. He did kind of have that swagger back, not like Sean Salmon days type of swagger, you know, the kind that was punched out of him in that last round by Lyoto, where he just kept moving his head and there was nothing left, and, He just danced himself into a knockout, but it was back a little bit, and he's very, very fast. Very fast, especially compared to Henderson, who is a freak of an athlete, and you know, a lot of college wrestlers are. They just have this grit and determination. And Henderson, you know, TRT or not, he probably is like a Randy Couture, where they're just the freaks that are going to be doing this into their 40s and be okay with it. But, you know, Evans, to me, got the better of most of the exchanges that he had. And, you know, even though Henderson tried takedowns, Evans tried takedowns in the second round, and I think people gave Henderson more credit for stuffing those takedowns than he probably deserves, because he didn't do a whole lot, you know, besides that, where, you know, Rashad was landing some good punches, and he did actually get a takedown in that round. So for those people that thought he swept the show, I can't see that. And again, the fight earlier on with Tyron Woodley and Jake Shields, to me, that was much more up for debate than this was, because again, Rashad Evans did more to win that fight than Dan Henderson, and I thought was far more effective. Where it's very difficult for me to believe somebody was able to give Dan Henderson two rounds. I just don't think so. Henderson landed a good left hand in the first round that did drop Rashad momentarily and shook him up a little bit, but Evans was able to get it back together so fast and clear his head, and I thought landed significantly before the round ended, where, again, that's the big round that people were giving to Henderson, and I just didn't see it.
Hold that thought. Back in a moment. Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern, on the Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio, Channel 94, 794, XM Radio, Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, and, of course, on the TuneIn Radio app on your smartphone. Search Sports Byline or Wrestling Observer. You can also check us out on the Sirius Satellite Radio app on your smartphone as well. And, of course, for the latest news and information in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com. Daily news updates on the website. Also, radio shows, tons and tons of radio shows. We got radio shows every single solitary day on the website. Two big shows last night. Mike and Dave broken down into two shows over 3 hours. That's available. Dave and I back later on tonight. Wrestling Observer Radio talking the WWE Payback pay-per-view, Triple Mania, and so much more. And a lot of stuff. That's all available. It's $10.99 a month. If you love this show, if you love Wrestling Observer Live, I guarantee you will love a subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. It's only $10.99 a month. For that price, you get every brand new radio show we do. You get every brand new Wrestling Observer newsletter, Figure Four Weekly, and archives of the newsletters and radio shows. Radio shows dating back to 2005. Thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of audio. Check it out, everybody. You'll never be at a loss for stuff to listen to as a subscriber to WrestlingObserver.com, or read so much stuff. It's pretty much a full-time job just to follow along all the radio and the audio and the newsletters as well. So check it out. Back issues of the Observer as well. WrestlingObserver.com, the place to go, the number one combined pro wrestling and mixed martial arts website on the internet. All right, back to the news. Any final thoughts on UFC 161?
Now, it'll be interesting to see when you do finally see the main event, what you think there, too, because I think you talked about the first two rounds. In the third round, again, you know, Henderson went after Evans, but to me that was, you know, even more than the first two. Rashad Evans' round. So I guess they're talking about him, the possibility of him and Glover Teixeira, which is, you know, actually a fight that I wouldn't mind seeing, and would probably result in a guaranteed knockout. And Dan Henderson, again, too, as I said, just a freak in nature, but the third-ranked light heavyweight right now, obviously he'll probably drop to where Rashad Evans is at number six or so. But it's an interesting situation with Henderson, because he's another guy, I think even more so than somebody like Roy Nelson, where Dan Henderson is still so good and so experienced and so savvy that he can beat probably, again, 90% of the guys walking around at 205 pounds that think they can fight in this world. But he's not going to be able to beat the top tier, and definitely probably not going to be able to beat John Jones, and it doesn't look like we're going to see that fight.
All right, this afternoon is the Triple Mania iPay-Per-View. Yes, you, the listener, can watch this show on iPay-Per-View through Ustream. Head over to Ustream. Check out Triple Mania from AAA, the promotion down in Mexico. A lot of big matches on the show taking place from Mexico City. Blue Demon Jr. and Macias have a singles match for the Latin American Championship. Cibernético and El Hijo del Paraguayo in a 2 out of 3 hair versus hair match is the main event of the show. Tejano is defending the AAA World Mega Heavyweight title against the winner of a Chessman heavy metal match. Jeff Jarrett is on the show. Matt Morgan's on the show. Jack Evans on the show. A lot of big matches. And as noted, you'll be able to check that out on Ustream. And Mike, is that on the docket?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I'm hoping it's got some replays attached to it, like most things on Ustream.
If you buy this on Ustream, you'll be able to watch it through July.
Perfect. Perfect. That's what I'm going to do then, because I'll probably check out Payback for the most part, and maybe I go back and forth with it a little bit, but Ustream has been very successful, at least when it comes to me purchasing anything out of the New Japan iPay-per-views, Invicta, and even this past Dragon Gate show that aired on iPay-per-view. This isn't Dragon Gate USA. This is actually Dragon Gate from Japan. They decided to air their show from May, a big pay-per-view that they had, decided to try out iPay-per-view here in the States, and it worked out flawlessly again. There's never a problem with video or anything like that when it comes to Ustream, so looking forward to AAA tonight, and I'm looking forward to seeing a whole bunch of people that I haven't had a chance to see in forever, because despite the fact that I can't even tell you, from Divinus Las Luchas to CMLL on at 3 in the morning on Galavision, I cannot tell you how much, Latin American wrestling that I have the ability to see, but AAA is, 95% of that stuff is CMLL, and the other 5% is like IWRG, and AAA hasn't been on in so long. I haven't had a chance to see Macias or Blue Demon or Paraguayo or most of these guys in quite some time. So if for no other reason, just to see some of these guys again, who I haven't seen in a couple of years because they haven't had TV, it's going to be good to see.
So did you get the Dragon Gate pay-per-view?
I did.
How was it? Give us a review.
It was really good. It was. I think my expectations were a touch too high going into it, because there were people that were touting it as better than the New Japan January 4th show. It was the most epic Dragon Gate show that they've ever put on, and the greatest title matches that they've ever put on, and I was kind of really into seeing it and expecting that, and that wasn't the case. It's a good show. It's a good show for people if they wanted to start getting into it. It was a good way to for those people, ice cold, to start, but it also wasn't a show that transcended, I think, like the New Japan show did, where if you took somebody who didn't watch Japanese wrestling and sat them down and said, watch this, that they would, by the end of it, get into it and enjoy it as much as they do American wrestling. I don't think that was the case with this show. There were some really good matches, and if you're a Dragon Gate fan, you're really going to appreciate it, and you're going to think a lot of that stuff was great. But I don't think any of the matches on there, were, Do Fixer and Blood Generation type of stuff from the Ring of Honor weekends or anything that Toriumon or Dragon Gate has ever done in their entire existence going back, to the late 90s or whenever Ultimo Dragon actually started up the first incarnation of the company. Again, good show, but it was a little surprise from some of the reaction of the hardcore fans that really beat down the door and said, this is the show of the year. This is better than anything you've seen. As far as the matches were by far better, but with that said, when you include the pageantry and stuff like that, I don't even think it was as good as WrestleMania, let alone anything that New Japan's done this year, or even the Dragon Gate USA show from WrestleMania weekend. I even thought that was better. So to each their own, and if you're a Dragon Gate fan, I definitely say, spend the $20 and support them and watch it, because, again, the stream was flawless, and they do have a product which is fun to watch, so the more pay-per-views that are out there, as far as I'm concerned, the better. I don't have to buy them, but I like the opportunity to buy them if it's out there. So, again, if you're not, I would say probably skip this show. Again, unless you really want to start getting into Dragon Gate, this isn't a must-see show where it's going to go down in the annals of history, I don't believe.
How much caffeine have you had today?
I've had a lot of caffeine, and the reason why is I have gotten no sleep in the past God knows how many hours I've actually been awake now, because I'm on the East Coast and Dave Meltzer's on the West Coast. And we did a 3-hour and 11-minute show last night, which wrapped up at about 6:30 this morning. And I think I've already repeated that because, you know what? I've had too much coffee and I'm running on fumes.
I'm astonished that you are still going.
I've been greatly expired or expired. Yeah, you know, I'm probably going to expire.
Don't expire.
It'll be good for ratings. So if I'm going to expire, I hope it happens here on this show. On Sirius Satellite Radio.
He's got to last.
Highland Radio Network.
Another 15 minutes, Mike. That's all you got. You just got to survive.
Now, Rick Flair taught me I could go all night and go a little longer.
That's what you've done. You literally have gone all night and gone a little longer.
A lot longer, and it hurts.
Now
it's starting to hurt.
I'll try and speed up this clock. Maybe we can get on a spaceship and mess with time. Anyway. As you can see, I haven't got enough caffeine in me. All right. Quentin Jackson has now had 2 appearances on Impact in our pro wrestling MMA tie-in for the week. First, he did the face-to-face with Kurt Angle. Then he came out swinging a chain. What have you thought of Rampage on Impact so far? I think he's done an all right job, although I believe they have absolutely no idea what they're going to do with him.
Oh, yeah, they've already screwed this up this past week. I mean, I thought, you know, last week was great. You have them go out there, you have them do the face-off with each other, and Kurt Angle, you're in my ring sort of thing, and I thought that all ended up really well and came across really well. For them to shake hands this week, and it's all about mutual respect, it's like, why? Why? You didn't have to do that. You really didn't have to do that, so why'd you do it? It just, to me, that was a very foolish thing to do, because why not keep them away from each other for a while? It's not like you're going to have Quentin Jackson wrestling on TV every week, busting out his repertoire. It's going to be a special thing, so why not just keep, again, that sporting type of tension in there? I think they made a mistake with that, but with that said, he was a huge wrestling fan, and God knows I don't know how his body is going to hold up with taking even limited bumps or anything like that. But at least for right now, his heart seems to be into it. And because of the personality he has, and because of the fact he is obviously Kurt Angle's short, so he's bigger than Kurt Angle, but he's at least somewhat physically imposing enough. It's something at least exciting for TNA and to watch for.
Did you hear the King Mo interview on Inside MMA, where he revealed that he is training approximately 2 hours per week at pro wrestling?
I, you know what, if those 2 hours were with Rip Rogers one-on-one, I'm a little bit better with it, but that still stings. But then again, what can you expect? His job is still to be an MMA fighter, and that's what he's got to do first.
The Reed Flair autopsy, as I talked about at the beginning of the show, unfortunately, it has come back that he had Xanax in his system, muscle relaxer, and a heroin overdose. Read an article that said he'd had 3 overdoses over the course of the prior few years, and I guess this would have been his 4th. This one he did not survive. Very sad story. His mother is just absolutely beside herself, as is Rick. And again, in the newspaper article where she was talking about this, they again talked about how they just wish he could have stayed in Japan. Admitted that he knew he had a problem, and he, not just the family, but he feared coming back to the United States, because I guess it was just something that when you have an addiction, you just, I don't know, you just can't help yourself. And unfortunately, he did come back, and right before they were going to leave for a series of appearances with his father, he had another incident and didn't survive that one. So very sad story, but that is the Reed Flair autopsy results, and unfortunately what a lot of people expected.
Yeah, really, really sad. Like you said, there were people that, you know, hoped he could have stayed in Japan, and they really feared what could happen. And it's just, again, a really just sad all the way around situation. The Xanax was probably legally prescribed to him, but the rest of that, especially the heroin, which everybody knew he had a problem with, it's just amazing, because it's not like they left Reed out there on an island not to get help or anything like that. I mean, you know, Rick was with him, was going to be with him that whole tour, and they have two separate rooms, and you know, you can't babysit people 24/7 all the time. They're going to go out there and they're going to make their choices, and unfortunately, to the level that Reed Flair was addicted, it's gone from physical. I mean, it's so incredibly physically being dependent, but mentally dependent, and that's what makes it even worse and just very sad.
All right, everybody, we're going to head to a break. When we come back, we've got our final segment on the show. Maybe I'll get Mike's final thoughts here. The Payback pay-per-view is about to begin, and we got a lot of matches. So we're going to do a quick prediction contest regarding the next pay-per-view, which is Money in the Bank. So hold your horses for that. Back in just a moment, Wrestling Observer Live Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Payback is about to start, the WWE Payback pay-per-view, and it is the final show leading to the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. Been a lot of talk about Daniel Bryan over the last couple of weeks and what they're going to do with him. I had heard that he may be in the title picture in both July and August. Later, I heard the idea was to perhaps put him in Money in the Bank, perhaps to win the Money in the Bank briefcase, only to cash in at SummerSlam against John Cena in a challenge match. And quick question, which way do you think they'll go? And if you think that he wins Money in the Bank and cashes in at SummerSlam, does it matter if in a head-on, head-to-head challenge with John Cena, he does not successfully cash in the briefcase?
They're going to do it to somebody at some point.
They did, John Cena.
Well, yeah, I guess so. But that's, it's cleaned up a little bit, and I don't think we'll be hyped as heavily as, we'll be. To me, I have a feeling the history will dictate the next person that happens to will be the one that really lost the first opportunity. And I think with Daniel Bryan, they could actually get away with that. They really could, in that people are sort of cheer Daniel Bryan anyway. He's going to have his fan base, the catchphrases and the whole nine yards, and I don't think that's going anywhere for a while. I think time and being shown to be a goof will do him in, but anything they do with him right now, forget it. The whole thing with Sheamus backfiring at WrestleMania, which led to this whole thing with Daniel Bryan, you can pull it off with him. It won't hurt him at all. It'll be annoying for his fan base, but you could actually do that. I would hope they don't, because Daniel Bryan winning it and going off and being the guy to win that, to beat Cena, I'd be completely happy with that. And you know what? I'm going to throw it back to you now because I need to go to sleep.
Mike, happy Father's Day.
Thanks.
I want you to jump into bed, get ready for 15 minutes of sleep before your son delivers another Bombs Away knee drop off the top. And everybody else, a wonderful Father's Day as well. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Huge thank you to Mike for all the hard work this weekend. I very much appreciate it, as does everybody else. Thanks, everybody, at Sports Byline USA. We'll be back next week with a brand new show. Enjoy WWE Payback, everybody. Talk to you later on tonight at WrestlingObserver.com. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.